The Sustainable Voice, bringing you big successes from small places worldwide.
Welcome back to The Sustainable Voice, my friends. This is Ashish, your host. Remember the phrase? If you hand a man a fish, he'll eat for the day. You teach that same man how to fish, he'll never go hungry again. Well, how about we talk about weaving? Because the same applies here. Teach somebody how to weave, and they'll never go hungry again. That's what today's about. That's what we're going to be talking about. We're taking you beyond the confines of the Sacred Valley and beyond the areas of Machu Picchu and Cusco and into the remote hills of the Sacred Valley, about an hour and a half from Ollanta, to these communities that where these women are being taught micro-entrepreneurship through weaving. Women who used to sit idly by while their spouses went to go find work, and somebody would show up at their doorstep, they couldn't read or write, would have them sign papers thinking it was for something good, turning out to be the deed to their land. So teaching these women how to weave, it's the same thing as teaching that man how to fish. Teaching them micro-entrepreneurship so they can provide for their families so that they can never be taken advantage of again. See, and that's the beauty of it. What's the phrase? Woven into the fabric of our life. That's what this organization is about. It's called Awamaki. And that's what they do up in these communities. It's about enhancing an experience. If you're going to Peru to get up into these communities, up these dirt roads that are barely wide enough for one car, let alone a microbus, it's four-wheel drive all the way. But once you get up here, you're 11,000 feet up. The air has never been clearer up here. The air is so pure, it's fresh. You could smell even the hay, you could smell the earth, and you could smell how they make their stuff. In fact, if you take something from here home with you, it will still smell the scent of what it was, the earthy scent that it had there. That's what makes this space so special. That's what makes it so amazing. The fact that you go up to these communities and you get to meet these women who are being taught micro-entrepreneurship. Remember, this podcast is about big successes in small places. Well, there is none bigger than this project right here. I've seen this firsthand, my friends. I've been up here and I've met these women and I've seen how they've succeeded. And I also saw how they struggled last year. And I want to tell you about both sides of it. I want to tell you how real these Andean communities are. You know, if you've been to Peru, you'll go into some of these towns, you'll see these people selling bracelets and selling necklaces and different textiles. And you kind of wonder how they set the price for it. Do you negotiate? Do you not negotiate? What if this was an organization? What if you're able to go to a place here where this organization is teaching these women how to actually make sure they're providing for themselves, setting a price where they can still have something left over to provide for their family, setting a price that's fair for you. Setting a price for something that's handmade and it's a method handed down generation upon generation upon generation, right? Think about that. Think about how amazing this experience would be when you get up here and you're seeing this and you're seeing these women that are weaving using old methods, whether it's a bracelet, whether it's a necklace, whether it's a bag, whether it's a hat, whether it's something else. And you start looking going, oh my gosh, this is a method I didn't even know was possible. How they dye, what they're using, how they're using alpaca wool, what they're making it with. It's something you've never seen before. It's not a factory. It's what they make for themselves, and you're part of the process. This is what real Andean culture is about. This is what you're missing if you're not going up here, if you're just stopping in the Sacred Valley and then carrying on. It's about having an enhanced experience where you get to go beyond what the normal is, to come back and say, I have a new friend. I've learned something new. Now, I told you, I also watched them in despair this last year. Now, I want to stop for a second, just talk about maybe some political stuff, not political in terms of politicians, but more so the fact that life isn't as simple as just lock down and you'll be safe. In these countries, like in Peru, there's collateral damage to think about. Over the last 15 months, I watched these women go from thriving in the tourism industry, where they were making all sorts of textiles for restaurants, for hotels, for customers, to now all of a sudden having to walk 15 miles each way to pick up their kids, to go and pick up food, and having nothing left over for them. It literally went from overnight from a successful business to basically being homeless. Now, I saw it firsthand because I was in Peru back in May, my friends, and I saw one of these women come down from one of the communities called Huayoc Alto. So she came down from this community. She did not have the money for any kind of food, so there was actually a produce vendor there. She was looking at those large passion fruits, and I think it was a passion fruit. She was looking to buy one. And I thought, okay, well, maybe she's buying one for herself. What I saw next is what stopped me in my tracks. She turned around and I saw a baby on her back that clearly was hungry. Her plan was to get that passion fruit and have that one passion fruit sustain them for a whole week. Now, listen, guys, I've been lost at Mount Lemmon for 48 hours. I had 4 bottles of water and a roll of breath mints between 2 people to get through those 48 hours. I know what hungry looks like, and I'm a big guy. Now, think about what's happening here. So, of course, we helped her with the groceries, but she's one of 1,000. And that's the part that we don't see. So if you're entering into a debate with somebody about whether or not to lock down and whether or not to be safe, of course, be safe, feel safe. That comes first. I want to put this morsel in your head. Think about the collateral damage. Think about more than just the conversation, because it's not always about black and white, not always about lights on or lights off or lockdown or not lockdown. Now, coming back to this organization and this experience and this area, I visited 8 different communities up here. Huayoc Alto was one of them. You get up here and it's all, you know, graffiti everywhere, the design graffiti, not the tag one, the one that makes the place look beautiful. They're building weaving centers. There's so much pride here. If one of the children are running around, all the elders come out. It clearly is a whole community that is raising one family and vice versa. And they're all helping each other. And they accept you with so much warmth right the minute you get there. And you start seeing that this place right here thrives on people like you and me coming there. Now, we're not coming there to shop, just coming there and actually sitting with them, talking with them, taking in the scents, the smells, the aroma of what you're feeling, because it is the genuine earthy smell. It is also the cleanest air you're going to breathe anywhere in Peru. And that's the most amazing part. You know, when you get up towards these communities, you start smelling the alpacas, you start smelling some of the nature. And for some people, they like it, some people maybe not. But once you get past that and walk into the communities and you sit down with these women, now all of a sudden they're offering you tea. Now they're actually making you part of their home. They're giving you something to wear to keep you warm. It's amazing. Now, you cross-reference that with a different community that I visited in a different part of the world. That community, in order for me to get that same type of hospitality, I would have to drink a mixture of cow's milk, warm cow's milk, just taken right there, and the cow's blood direct from the throat. They just poke a hole. I would have to drink that and keep it down by some miracle in order to be accepted. Thankfully, none of that was required here. You see, that's where this real element of acceptance comes in. I want you, all of you, my listeners, to close your eyes for a second. Just close your eyes. Man or woman, doesn't matter. I want you to pretend that you make your living through weaving. I want you to pretend that you have as much pride in weaving as you do in raising your children, as you do in keeping a healthy home, as you do in your current profession. Imagine that you are doing something you love. You're weaving. You are using methods that are handed down to you, not 20, 30 years, thousands of years ago. You're using that same method now. You're dyeing the alpaca wool in the same way your ancestors did. You are weaving the same way your ancestors did. There is no machine involved here. The calluses on your finger prove that there's no machines involved here. But yet every callus you see, you get used to, because it reminds you. You look at the callus and say, oh, that callus was from this textile. That callus was from this textile. Keep closing your eyes. Keep thinking about this fact that as you get these textiles, there is somebody who wants your creation. Whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a tourist, whether it's a hotel, whether it's a local store, somebody wants your creation. Somebody wants your talents. That somebody could be in a different part of the world or a different part of the country. Keep your eyes closed. Now imagine somebody shows up and says, I'm sorry, I'm taking all of that away. You see, that's how a success can get unraveled pretty quickly. When I was in Peru in May, I met one of these women there. She broke down in tears, hysterically crying, not because she was upset. She was so happy to see me. And thankfully, some of the Spanish I learned over the years was retained. I was able to pick up what she was saying in Spanish, and then the rest was in Quechua, which was being translated. But as she was talking in Spanish, I picked up something very key. The woman I was talking to didn't say, I work in tourism. She said, I used to work in tourism. And she talked about how this was her livelihood, how she provides for her family, how because she was doing this, she was able to actually keep her spouse at home, that her husband was actually staying home and was helping look after the kids, wasn't gone for 6-8 weeks. You can open your eyes now. Now, as you open your eyes, if you are listening with somebody else or if you are going home to somebody else, I want you to imagine that person being gone for 8 weeks. Would you still be around when they got back? And if you were around, would you be happy if they left you to do everything for 8 weeks? That's essentially what was happening here. And this project not only teaches these women how to read and write, the Awamaki movement, if you will, actually is teaching these women how to take the micro-entrepreneurship skills they're being taught, whether it's setting prices, whether it's understanding how to run a business, and bringing it back to their communities and actually using it for the betterment of their communities to provide for themselves. That, my friends, is how you teach somebody how to fish. Now, you think about where they are and some of these pictures that you'll see. If you ever see these pictures of the Sacred Valley in Peru, you'll see these snow-capped mountains around the valley. We're up in the snow-capped mountains, not the highest peaks, but we're up pretty high. We're up in these mountains. That's where these people are. That's where these amazing families are. And some of them are in their 20s. Some of them are in their 80s. Some of them are in their 15s. Some of them are 65. You can't ask them their age because they, in many cases, don't know. Yet you look at their kids and they're full of life. What's the phrase I heard in England? They're full of beans. Just full of life. And they are absolutely just being able to go through and explain and explore. And they bring you in and they show you how their world works. And you look to yourself and go, you know, if these people can live this simplistically, they don't have a care in the world. They don't even know what a stress looks like or what a real worry looks like because it's not part of their life. Yet, they have one of the hardest paths. Not only are you a single parent at this point, which in itself is a pretty difficult task. Not only are you trying to provide for your family through weaving. Not only are you doing it in a third world country. Not only are you doing it while your spouse is gone for 8 weeks. You also have somebody trying to take your land from you. So think about that for a second. Think about what that's like. And yet they have a smile on their face every day of the week. Now, I love math. I love numbers. And what I love about this project and I love about travelers visiting here is the fact that every dollar generated here, whether it's through buying something or a donation, whatever the case may be, generates $4 of income. That's a pretty good return. $4 of income. For these women. And that's for every dollar. And when they get close to $1,000 for the year, they actually have provided for a family. Every $1,000 or every 980 something provides for the family. Call it $1,000 to be even. You think about that. They're able to explain to you what they need. They explain to you what they want. They explain to you where they're going, but they don't want anything from you. They want to earn it. They want to show you. They want to invite you in. I can count on one hand how many places in the world are that inviting. Now, I'm not talking about local people inviting you into their country. I'm talking about in sacred land up in the hills. This is their sacred land within their pueblos. They're actually inviting you in. No ritual, no agenda, even though they have a right to have an agenda. No fear, even though they have a right to have a fear because of what's happened in the past. None. They want you to be there. And it's just amazing when you meet these people. What's really cool is when you talk to them now, now that Peru's border is open. And this kind of a project requires an open border. They're starting to get back to work. They're starting to look forward. They're starting to approach with even more gratitude than they already had. They're starting to meet people and talk about their work and throwing their passion into their work and into their textiles like never before. Could you imagine? You know, we get in a car and we have to drive 90 minutes to get here on bumpy roads. We get out and go, oh, my back is sore. My leg is sore. Now imagine having to walk 15 miles every day, down and 15 miles up, with groceries on your head, with a child next to you, or perhaps carrying an infant on your back. Imagine coming down into the town of Ollanta to get food, then having to go right back up. Imagine coming down and not having respect of some people walking right past you. They think that you're a homeless beggar because you've walked down, you're dirty. They mistake you for being somebody who is destitute, versus somebody who actually is really well-educated in the local culture coming down for something. Yes, they're dirty. Yes, they're struggling, but they have so much pride in what they do. You know how you can tell that? The eyes. You look at the eyes. That woman I talked to you about that was going to sustain her and her daughter on one piece of passion fruit, she was still smiling. And when we gave her the rest of the food for the week, she started crying. She gave me a hug. And it wasn't about the tears. It was the fact that through the tears, you looked at her eyes and you could see that they were still humble. They were grateful and they were smiling. They were still, you know, what's the phrase? They were still looking up at the heavens. They were never asking why something happened to them. They were never playing victim. They're always looking to go forward. That's how special this place is. So my friends, if you find yourself going to Peru and you find yourself going to the Sacred Valley, you must, and I mean must, arrange to go up to see the women of Abamaki. You must go up to see either their workshop, which is right in the Sacred Valley, or go up into the mountains to their communities. There's 8 or 9 different communities there, and they are so special. They offer something really different. I want to talk for a second about the way they make their things. So I remember one woman was talking to me about these bracelets that she makes. Now, in Colombia, they're called caña flechas. Here in Peru, they're actually just the bracelets, the way they make them. But the way they wear them. So when I got them, and I still have one of them at home, if you smell them, you could still smell the smoke because they do burn some things up there. Not garbage or anything like that, but they use it to smoke out the textile a bit. And you could still smell it. The earthy tone, like the soil, you could still smell it. You can't see it, but you can smell it. You literally can smell one bracelet and you can it takes you right back to that moment. So I smelled that bracelet. I remembered where I was sitting. I remembered what I was wearing. I remembered who I was talking to. I remembered what I was trying to do. I was trying to weave a bracelet and it wasn't having much luck. But I remember doing all of that. It took me back in such vivid form. Like nothing I've ever experienced in my life. See, and that's how I knew how special this was. The fact that one smell brought all that back. That's huge. That's beyond huge. You know, that's really the key thing. Now imagine on top of that, the fact that they're able to do something they love and the fact that they're learning English means they get to protect their land as well. The funniest thing that happened, one of the women that was there that I've known for a while now, and I got to see her again, she was the one who started crying when I showed up this time in May because of just how hard last year was. You could tell the emotional toll it took. You know, what was really crazy was when I saw her family last time, this is, you know, a few years ago, when I saw it the first time I met them, the husband was wearing a Messi shirt. You know, for those of you football fans, Messi was playing for Lionel Messi. He's one of the best football players in the world. He was playing for Barcelona at the time, now somewhere else. So when I saw him this time, he wasn't wearing the Messi jersey. So I asked him, I said, so where's your jersey in Spanish? He responds to me in Spanish and says, I don't like Messi anymore. He's old. Now, think about this for a second. These guys live 11,000 feet up. There is no TV. There is no radio. There is no internet up here. They are about as detached and disconnected from the world as you know it. If you went up to them and talked to them about a current event, they would not know what that current event is. Yet this person knew enough to know, or in his case, that he wasn't going to wear a Messi jersey anymore. So then I asked him, whose jersey are you wearing right now? Ronaldo? He looks at me and he starts smiling and he says, absolutely not. He's old too. Then he pulls out a jersey of a local Peruvian soccer star. you know, one who was in the national team. And he explains that he's wearing this because Peru made the World Cup for the first time last time around. Think about that. No internet, no telephone, no connection, but he knew that much. Why is that? Think about that. They were so connected to the world, these communities were, when the spouse was going into Lima, into Cusco, into other big cities to go find work. They became connected. But as more connected as they got to the modern society, the more they were leaving behind of their ancient society, the more they were leaving behind of their culture, their ancient culture. So now you can see that by not having to leave for that long, the culture is preserved. But the things that they want to let in, they let in. The things that they want to be a part of modern society-wise, they let in. The rest of it stays out. That's so powerful, right? I mean, that's just it. It's the fact that when you go up here and you see these women and you talk to them, you get a genuine kinship for them. And like I said, you're not drinking any cow's blood or cow's milk to get into here. They give you simple warm tea, like I said. They even know if you have any kind of altitude sickness and say, please sit down. Please, we'll give you this. We'll give you that. Please have this. You know, and what's so funny is when they're there, of course, they take out their textiles to show you what they have. And if you do want to buy something, you know, they would love it if you did. But they're so insecure about charging you for something that if you ask how much it is, which is what you're supposed to do, they look at their instructor and say, how much should I charge? And the instructor says, no, this is part of your training. You have to know for yourself what you think you're worth and what you think that piece is worth and what you need to be able to thrive, what you need to do to be able to fish so you never go hungry again. So back to my original point where we started this about teaching a person how to fish so they never go hungry again. Think about that for a second. Last year, their fishing pole was taken away. Yet, they found new ways to fish. And now the fishing pole is being given back to them, so it's going to be enhanced even more. This, my friends, is just amazing. It is really evolution at work. Whether it's Darwin's theory or your own theory, it is evolution at work. And it's the fact that what's really special is any of these women could have left at any point and gone into Cusco, gone into Lima, gone to go find work at Machu Picchu, uprooted their kids, left their community, and never come back. Not one did. Not one left. That's how powerful this is. So when you guys are in Peru, when you are there, make sure you ask about Awamaki. Make sure you ask about going up and seeing them. All it takes is a half a day. You have to get up early in the morning. You have to leave about 7 a.m. from your hotel to go up there. It's a half a day. Go up and spend a few hours up here. Whether you buy something or not, who cares? Don't worry about that. Just go and spend a few hours up here. Go and just see what this is about. If you're not back and if you're not completely changed as a person, call me. I'll go up with you and show you what you missed. That's really, really what I wanted to tell you about. Now, when you talk to these women and when you start thinking about what they do, you will see this red dress that they wear with these hats that they wear. And oftentimes you see these hats that are on off a little tilt that look like a bit of a sailor's hat. They're not, but they wear about a bit of a tilt. And oftentimes people ask me, well, is that just for show? No, that's actually how they dress in normal. That's what they wear. They're so proud of their culture that they wear this day in and day out. Now, look, I'm Indian, so there are definitely no shortage of traditional costumes and traditional outfits in my culture. But yet so many of my culture start modernizing their wardrobe with jeans and t-shirts and everything else to go with it. Not here. It still stays pure. It still stays true. That's really great. That's the part that makes it just different. Yes, of course they have lives. Of course they go socialize nearby. But the fact that they have something special to go with it, the fact that they actually are able to really bring you into the moment is what makes it different. So as we carry on with these episodes and we talk about the sustainable voice, we want to keep showing you big successes in small places. This is one of them. This is up in the middle of nowhere, up in the high Andes outside of the Ticket Valley. Towns you can't even find on a map. We can't wait to bring you more of these stories, to show you these big successes in different parts of the remote world. The world is getting smaller, my friends. It's not getting bigger. And getting around, it is now, especially after last year, it is not only our responsibility, not only our duty, it is our privilege to get to these far reaches of the world, to see and actually be able to come back and tell the stories like the one I just told you. I've had so much fun talking to you guys about Awamaki today. Until next time, stay well, be sustainable.
Thank you for listening to The Sustainable Voice. If you have a success story of your own, please reach out and share it with us. We'd love to hear from you. See you next time.